The Shir on the Kuti Sikha is Book 22, Chelik of Beis, the Sikha Bahar, the second Sikha. They just, L'hachazik Rosh, as they say in Hebrew, Halten Kop, they say in Yiddish and English, so you have to stay focused. It's, the concepts are beautiful, but you have to, we're comparing two Rashis. You have to remember that we're talking about two different verses that are being explained by Rashi. Let's jump into our Parsha. Parsha Bahar. The Torah says that a Jew who has sold himself as a servant to a second Jew, you're only allowed to sell yourself if you have no other options. So a person has sold himself to be a servant for a fellow Jew. So when the Yovel comes, the Jubilee, the 50th year comes, even though it's before his sixth year, as a practice, a Jew can only sell himself to another Jew for a maximum of 6 years. This, after he works 6 years, he goes free. Not the Shemitah year. It's a personal count. He works 6 years. The seventh year, you can't work for more than 6 years. Sometimes he could, if the Jewish servant says, I like it here, I want to stay. Then we have the process called the priesting of the year. But even then, by the Yovel, he has to go out. He goes out at the Yovel. Who goes out? He goes out, says the Pasuk, he goes out from you. Who? He? Who? He? Yeah. Who? Who? Who is he? And he is she. Right? Who? Uvanav imo. He and his son, children with him. So Rashi says on the words, he and his children, he says, Amar Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Shimon says, by the way, who's Rabbi Shimon? We're right before, exactly. We're right before Lag BaOmer. So Stam Rabbi Shimon, when you say Rabbi Shimon, without any other, I mean, there's a Rabbi Shimon ben Chalafta, for example. But if you say Rabbi Shimon without adding any other description, it's Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai. So he brings, Rabbi Shimon said, Rabbi Shimon ben Chalafta and Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai. Oh, I didn't know. Interesting, okay. They're very close to each other, nice. So we have to, so what does he say? Rabbi Shimon says, if he was sold, Banav Mimichalan, who sold his children? Why do they have to, why does the Torah tell us they go out? From here we know that his master is obligated to pay for the food expenses of the children. So if somebody sells himself as a servant to somebody else, he gets to feed the guy's, he has an obligation to feed the guy's children. Once the Yovel comes and he goes free, so he goes free with his children. In other words, that obligation also of feeding the children also goes away. That we have to understand. The question in the Pasuk is just who sold the children? It says he goes out with his children. All you really have to ask is who sold the children? Why did they going out? Why does Rashi add another sentence that says, Im hu nimkar, Rashi proceeds again. If he was sold, but who sold the children? That introduction, the introductory sentence, Im hu nimkar, if he was sold, who sold the children? It could have started from who sold the children? That's the question. Now, even though we understand that Rabbi Shimon did say it in this way, but we know that the Rashi comes to explain the Torah. Rashi doesn't quote the words of our sages in the Talmud or in the Medrash verbatim. He very often shortens and changes. He just wants to bring you the content. So why does he say it with the same language as the Rabbi Shimon, with a question first and then an answer? A bigger question is that there's another time where we learned this a few weeks ago in the book of Shmois. The book of Shmois, in Parshas Mishpatim, it says that if somebody sells himself as a servant to another Jew, if he is married, then he goes out with his wife. And Rashi there says, he goes out with his wife. And Rashi says, and who made his wife come in to be a servant that she should have to go out? Like, he sold himself. How does his wife, why are we talking about now his wife? The Torah tells us, somebody buys a Jewish servant, he's also obligated in the mezonot, is obligated to feed the wife. Once the servant leaves the service of the master, his wife goes out too. In other words, she no longer, the master no longer has to feed the wife. So we see that Rashi there doesn't say an introductory sentence to ask the question, like he does here. He doesn't say, if he was sold, when was the wife sold? He just starts, who brought the wife in? He doesn't say, if he was sold, how did she get in? Why here does he say, if he was sold, Who sold the kids? That introductory sentence is bothersome. Now, it's even more wondrous. I'll tell you why, says the Rabbi. Because the Rabbi Shimon says these two sentences in one place in the Gemara. And in both of them, Rabbi Shimon says the same style. Rabbi Shimon says, if he was sold, who sold his wife? From here we know that that the master has to feed the wife as well. We're not talking about now who sold, if he sold himself or he was sold. That's going to be the path to the answer. Right now, we're just seeing that Rabbi Shimon says twice the same language in both things. The pasuk that speaks about the wife and the pasuk that speaks about the children going out, in both, he treats it with the same kind of language. He says, Im hu nimkar, may, I know the guy sold himself, now the guy was sold, but who sold his wife or who sold his kids? Yet Rashi doesn't bring that language when he speaks about the wife, the portion of Mishmatim. He does bring that extra language. If he sold, who sold the kids? When he speaks about in our parsha about the kids. More than that. So we're just speaking, if Rashi adds that sentence, add it in both places, or don't add it in both places. Especially the Gemara, Rabbi Shimon, who is quoting, does bring it in both, for both Pesukim. More than that, what Rashi brings, the words, who sold the children, we have to understand the Teiras Kohanim. Teiras Kohanim is a Midrashic book on the Sefer Vayikra. In the Teiras Kohanim, it brings the teaching of the master is obligated to feed the children without even introducing and saying, who sold the children? So Rashi could have just brought that medrash and just said, not without asking who sold the children, just say like the Teiras Kohanim, like the medrash of the Teiras Kohanim, to say, it says that his children go out. From here, we know that the master is obligated to feed the children without asking the question and giving an answer. Why do we need a question here? You're thinking a little further, because that's going to be part of the answer. Let's understand, actually, you're asking, makes sense that he has to feed the wife and he has to feed the children because they belong to the husband. He's taking care of the husband. Let's see, is that so simple? So, paragraph 2. L'chaire, we could have explained the difference between the two explanations in Rashi that has got to do with the two different languages in the Psukim. In our Pasuk, what does it say? It says, V'yatza mi'imach, that when it comes the Yovel, it comes the Jubilee, he will go out from you. He, the Pasuk says, who? Ubanav imo, he and his children with him. So that's why Rashi says, I understand why he goes out. He was sold, but who sold the children? In the portion of Mishpatim, it doesn't say who, v'ishto. It says, at the end of 6 years, v'yatza ishto imo, his wife will go out with him. It doesn't say the word who. So that's why Rashi doesn't introduce the question by saying, im hu nimkar, ishto mi'ichnisa. He just starts by saying, who brought the wife in? Who sold the wife? In other words, Rashi's just treating each pasuk based on the language of that pasuk, but that doesn't make, it's not enough to answer our question, because Rashi wrote his commentary in the Torah with exactness and with conciseness. He doesn't use extra language, extra words. He doesn't, speak poetically and flowerily. Rashi just wants to get to the point to explain the pshat, to explain what the pasuk means. So if these words, im hu nimkar, banav mimachram, if he is sold, who sold the children? Those words, if he is sold, doesn't add anything to the explanation. So even if it's in the pasuk, that language, but why should Rashi bring it in his pirush? If you want to say that when he asks the question, who sold the children, you need to introduce it by saying, if he was sold, who sold the children? So if you need that introduction, why doesn't he use that introduction also in the earlier parsha where he says, who sold the wife? Says the wife goes out to freedom. He should also ask there, he's sold, but who sold the wife? If he doesn't bring it there, don't bring it here. If you bring it here, bring it there. So we have to say that there must be something different here that causes Rashi to say in the language that there he doesn't say it in that language, here he does. He's bringing in Parshas Mishpatim from the language of the Mechilta. He's not bringing the Gemara with Rabbi Shimon. And also in our parsha, why does he quote the name of the one who said it, Rabbi Shimon? There's got to be something in the Psukim that's different from those, that Pasuk in Mishpatim to this Pasuk. But first, let's ask some more questions, of course. Paragraph 3. Another question in these two explanations of Rashi. In Parshas Mishpatim, Rashi comments and says, when it says that his wife goes out, so he says, this teaches us, the Torah is teaching us that the owner is also obligated in feeding the wife and the children. The Pasuk there only mentions wife. Rashi says, this Pasuk teaches us the owner is obligated to feed the wife and the children. He adds children as well as wife. Even though children is not mentioned in that Pasuk, it just says wife. So commentaries say that the fact that Rashi there adds wife and children, it doesn't mean to say we learn it from the Pasuk there that says his wife goes out with him. Because as we said, that Pasuk is just talking about the obligation the master has to feed his wife. And when they go free, the wife goes out and she doesn't get fed anymore by the master. So we wouldn't know from the Pasuk that says the wife goes out that the children also get fed. And like the Gemara says, the Gemara asks in the Masechet Kiddushin, when these two teachings are taught, that the wife has to be fed by the master, and there's another Pasuk that says the children are fed by the master. The Gemara asks in classic Gemara style, why do we need two Psukim? If he told us, you mentioned just now, a man has two obligations. He has an obligation to feed his wife, he has an obligation to feed his children. So if the Torah tells us the wife, that obligation goes to the master, so we would know the children also. If he just told us about the children, we know wife also. So the Gemara says, Strichi, we need it to be mentioned both times, both about the wife and the children. Why? Because by a wife, we would say that maybe he wouldn't, children, we would say, a wife can work. Maybe she should work and get fed separately. Children can work. So we understand maybe if it just said the children have to be fed by the master, we wouldn't know that the wife has to be fed by the master. Maybe she should go and work. On the other hand, if it just said that the wife has to get fed by the master, we would say the kids for sure. We say, no, maybe not. Maybe the wife has to be fed by the master because she's embarrassed to go and beg. But kids, if they don't have food, they can just go around, knock on people's doors, and people give them food. A woman, you can't expect to do that for modesty. So in other words, from the pasuk that says that the master has to feed the wife, we don't know kids automatically. The Gemara even says the kids are different. Maybe kids would have to go beg. So how in the Pasuk of Mishpatim, where the Torah says his wife goes out, and Rashi says, this teaches us that the master is obligated to feed the wife and the kids. How do you know about the kids? The Torah only spoke about the wife. And the Gemara tells us kids are not so obvious, maybe. Just because it says wife, maybe the kids should go beg. However, because the din, he's telling you, Rashi's not telling you that you learn it from that verse. That verse only mentioned ishtei, wife. But once Rashi is telling you the halacha that you have to feed, he has to feed the wife. So he also tells you there's an additional law that also the kids have to get fed. Relying on the fact that the basis for feeding the kids comes later in our parsha, Parshas Bahar, where it says, "Hu uvan avima," he goes out with his children, which tells us that the children have to be fed by the master also. That's how I would learn. But that's very difficult to learn, says Rebbe, because besides for the fact that if so, why doesn't Rashi mention in our parsha also, if he's lumping the two together, why in our parsha does he just say that this is a teaching that the master has to feed the kids? Why doesn't he say feed the kids and the wife? If there he says the wife and the kids, even though the Torah just mentions wife, here the Torah just mentions kids, why doesn't he also give us both halachas, both parts of the halacha, the kids and the wife? And that's one question. And by the way, in the Torah's Kehanim, it does say, in the Torah's Kehanim on this parsha, it says, just like the master is obligated to feed him, he's obligated to feed his wife and his children. So why here doesn't he mention both, wife and children? If even the Mechilta is a medrash on the book of Shmos. Torah's Kehanim is a medrash on the book of Vayikra. Mechilta is a medrash on the book of Shmos. So if in the Mechilta, he has to say explicitly that we learned he has to feed the children from a different pasuk. So Rashi should have for sure explained that we need another pasuk. In other words, if the pasuk says his wife, the pasuk in Mishpatim in the book of Shmai says his wife goes out with him. For this, we know that the master has to feed the wife. And Rashi adds, and the children. But if in the Mechilta he says we need to know about the children being fed, we need the pasuk in Parshas Bahar, Rashi should also have said that. He just throws in children, but without saying where we learned that. The pasuk in Shmos only spoke about wife. We have to say, says the Rebbe, that according to Rashi, when you learn in the pshat, the simple meaning of the pasuk, you can learn from the pasuk that says the wife has to be fed, that also the children have to be fed. Not like what the Gemara says. What did the Gemara say? Why wouldn't it be enough to say the wife has to be fed? Why, when I say the wife has to be fed by the master, I wouldn't automatically know the kids have to be fed? So we said, because a woman, we would think, why does the Torah instructing you that the master, somebody who sold himself as a servant, the master has to feed the wife because she would be embarrassed to go beg. The children not. Says the Rebbe in a footnote here, in Pshat, it doesn't seem like why is the master obligated to feed the wife because we can't send her begging. That doesn't seem to be the reason. It would seem that the reason is that the husband is obligated to feed his wife. So now that the husband has sold himself, that responsibility goes to the master. But that also automatically would mean that the kids, you have an obligation also to feed your young kids. So in the pshat, the Gemara says, I need both. And the Gemara learns that there's differences. But Rashi, learning the simple pasuk, tells us, pasuk says he has to feed the wife and the kids, even though it doesn't mention kids, but same concept. The responsibilities of the husband and father go over to the master. More than that, so if so, why do we indeed need another pasuk to tell us about the kids? If from the first pasuk where it says "V'yatzai ishto imo," his wife goes out, and Rashi says from here we know who brought in the wife to be sold. No, 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 the wife was never sold, but she is under the wing of the master. The master has to feed the wife and children. If we know that from that one pasuk, why, according to Rashi, do we need a pasuk in this week's parsha that speaks explicitly about children? We understand it. Simple. The master has to take over the responsibilities of the husband and also father. Feed the kids. So why do we need another pasuk? And it's even a bigger question. Rashi in our pasuk in Bahar says, Mikan, from this pasuk we know Sherabo Chayav b'mezonot banav, that the master is obligated to feed the children. Not like in Parshas Mishpatim, which says, doesn't say Mikan. From here, in Parshat Mishpatim, where he teaches you the lesson that the guy has to feed the wife, he says, the Torah tells you, Magid HaKatuv, the Torah tells you. Here, Rashi is saying, we're learning it from here, not from somewhere else. So it seems like in the first Rashi, Rashi seems to say, we already know that he has to feed the kids from the pasuk that says he has to feed the wife. Later in Parshas Bahar, where it says explicitly that the kids go out, Rashi says, no, 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 we didn't know yet about the kids. From this pasuk, we know about the kids. In the earlier Rashi, you made it sound like we know about the kids already. In this Rashi, you're saying, no, we didn't know, we only know it from here. Seems like Rashi is disagreeing with himself, so to speak. Paragraph 4. So let's understand all this by first understanding another thing that there is to understand in the language of Rashi. Rashi starts off, he says, like this. If he was sold, who sold its children? There's a difference in the tense. There's a difference in the grammar here. You hear? Im hu nimkar, if he was sold, sold is was done to him. And then he says, banav mi mechalan. Who sold the children? Nimkar in Hebrew means sold by somebody else against his will. Who sold the children means who willingly sold the children. It should have said, if Rashi's bringing, if he was sold, who sold the children, it should have been the same tense. In the Hebrew would be, who nimkar, if he was sold, banav mi nimkaru, were his children sold by others? If he was sold by someone else, were his children sold by somebody else? Or if he sold himself, who sold the children? There's a change in tense here. There's a change in the Hebrew. It's very, very glaring. If he was sold, so to speak, against his will by somebody else, who willingly sold the children? Why are we changing? Why are we talking about him being sold, not about the children being sold? Talking about him being sold and about somebody selling the children. And it's even greater question. The Gemara Taka, it says, if he was sold, were his children sold? Rashi changes the language of the Gemara. Says, Im hunim kar, banav mi mechalan. So Rashi is telling us something here. So the explanation is like this. I think you jumped on it a little bit before. According to halacha, we know the halacha is a father cannot sell his son as a servant. He can sell his daughter. It's not so nice to hear that today. We can't relate to that today so much. But the pasuk says, "V'chim kor ish et bito," when a person sells his daughter. And from that we learn, the Mishnah learns, "Ha'ish mocher et bito ve'no mocher et beno." A man can sell his daughter and not sell his son. And then it says, and that's why the Gemara says, "Banav mi nimkarim," can his sons be sold? The whole halacha of them being able to be sold doesn't exist. Can't sell boys. Now, according to the Pshat, says the Rebbe, that's the halacha in the Gemara. But here we're going to learn an interesting concept. Even though that's the halacha from the Gemara, in the simple pshat, the simple understanding of the written Torah, you cannot see from the pasuk that says if a man sells his daughter for a maidservant, you cannot say that it only applies to a girl, not to a boy, because the whole parsha is talking about the specialty of selling a daughter, where really the intent is that she should be betrothed, she should get married into the family of the master. So she's going to have a much better future, really, for herself. But that doesn't apply to a boy. But really, in the simple reading of the pasuk, the Torah was just talking about a girl. But not necessarily do you have to learn that the Torah was saying that there's an exception that a boy can't be sold. Because if you think in simple meaning of the pasuk, there should be no difference between son and daughter in this regard. If you can sell your daughter, you should be able to sell your son. And that's why Rashi doesn't use the language of the Talmud, which says, who could have sold the sons? Because in the simple pshat of things, the sons could be sold. He says, mi mecharan. The question is not, how could they have been sold? It's not possible. No, the question is, who sold it? They could be sold. Let's say technically they could be, but who sold them? The guy sold himself to a slave. Who sold his children? Oh, now we'll understand, paragraph 5, why Rashi gives the lengthy, if he was sold, who sold the children? Rashi is trying to answer here something difficult. Not just why it says his children with him, but it also says, v'yotza, what does it say? That by the Yovel, v'yotza mi'imach, when the Yovel comes, he goes out from you, who? He and his children with him. Rashi is going to try and figure out why is the word who needed in the pasuk. What would have been lacking in the verse in the pasuk if it didn't say who? It could have just says v'yotza mi'imach. He goes out from you when the jubilee comes to freedom. Ubanav ima and his children with him. Why does it say who? He ubanav ima and his children with him. What's the who? So we would have been able to say that in our parsha, it's talking about, what is our parsha talking about? Our parsha is talking about when somebody gets into a place of struggling. When your brother is struggling. And the Torah says you should take him out, he and his children with him. Maybe the Torah is talking about two realities. The Torah is saying, v'yotza me'imach, he leaves you. And that's if he sold only himself. The pasuk saying, ubanav imay, he and his children go out, is speaking when he has such a terrible state that he had to sell his children also. Yeah, that's the pashtus. In other words, we could have been learning that maybe he was in need, so he sold himself. That's one that the Torah is talking about, two options. That he sold himself, not his children, or that sometimes maybe he was so bad in need that he sold himself and his children. Just one second. And so then the Torah says, that if he sold himself and his children, when the Yovel comes, he goes out, if he's just alone, sold himself. And if he sold himself and his children, he and his children go out. And Rashi says, I don't want you to learn that. Rashi says, if he was sold, but who sold the children? In other words, about him, it says in the Torah, v'nim karlach, and he was sold to you. But where does it speak in the Torah about the children being sold? The Torah never talked about a situation where he had to sell his children. The Torah says, if he's so bad in need, and he sold himself, when the Yovel comes, he goes out. But then the Pasuk adds, the Yovel comes, he and his children go out. Asks Rashi, who talked about children being sold? Never spoke about that. Why are we talking? So Rashi says, it's not two options. Either he was sold, or he and his children. Whoever spoke about his children? Banav mimachonam. This pasuk is not talking about selling children together with him. You see, in Parshas Mishpatim, where it says his wife goes out with him, it doesn't say who. So Rashi doesn't have to bring that language. If he was sold, was his wife sold? But here it says who, he, Ubanav ima and his children with him. It seems like maybe there's an option here to learn that there's two kinds of sales that could have happened, either just he or he and his sons. So Rashi says, no. Who's talking about selling his children? It wasn't mentioned anywhere. And that's what Rashi says, no. From here we know it's not talking about the children being sold. It tells us that the children were part of the package of him being a servant because the master has to feed the children as well. When it says, who one of ima, he and his children with him, it doesn't mean they go free. The children were never slaves. It means that they leave the master's jurisdiction in terms of feeding them. With what was Banav Imai? With what were the children with this servant? With the fact that they're on the same food plan that the master has to feed them, not that they were servants. Since this obligation in our pasuk, there's a chiddush, there's something new about this, even in addition to, and we're going to explain what that is, even in addition to what we know already about the obligation to feed the servant. So the pasuk doesn't just say you have to feed it, that the children go out, which teaches us you have to feed the children. Torah says also who, that there's an obligation to feed the servant and his children. We don't know yet what that means. We're about to see. Paragraph 6. The difference between the two verses, the verse in Parshas Mishpatim and the verse in our Parsha, Rashi already explained the Parshas Mishpatim, that the Parsha of Eved Ivri, there's two ways a person can get sold as a servant. There, in the book of Mishpatim, we're talking about a servant that was sold because he stole. Eved shenimkar b'gnevato, he stole and he wasn't able to pay back. He's not able to pay back. He has to get sold to the person he stole from till he pays back. In our portion in Vayikram Bahar, we're talking about somebody who's struggling. And because he has such a struggling financial situation, he has no choice but to sell himself to work for another Jew as a servant. So from that comes out a huge distinction between the obligation of feeding the family. When somebody is sold through Beis Din, he doesn't want to be sold, but he stole something. He can't pay. Beis Din says, sorry, I'm going to have to sell you. It makes perfect sense to say that Beis Din now has to make sure that his family is provided for. What are they going to do? They're going to sell him, and now they're going to have a wife and children of this guy coming to the tzedakah. They have to make sure that there's a solution for them. They're selling this guy. What's the solution? So the Torah, in other words, says, no. I'm telling you, Beis Din, to sell this guy because he can't pay what he stole. But that's going to include that the master who buys him is going to have to take the package, going to have to take the obligations of this servant on him, feed his wife and kids. It's not that the master has some benefit, because now she doesn't have to work for the master. He only bought it, only he was sold. But it's more beneficial for the master of this servant when the guy has a wife with him, who can take care of his basic immediate needs. You know, a person functions better when his wife is with him. So, but it's not for that reason that the wife goes along with him and the master has to feed the wife. It's because the Beis Din has an obligation to take care of the needs of the woman. Usually the man would do it. But now the Beis Din took away the man's freedom and said, you stole, you can't pay, you're being sold. Yeah, but he has obligations to his family. So the Torah is saying, no, the Beis Din has to take care of that. The master will have to pay, will have to feed the wife and children. So that's where we understand that if Beis Din is even taking care of the needs of the wife, technically the wife could go work. But we're saying, no, no, no. If Beis Din is selling, Beis Din has to make sure to take care of the whole scenario. Let's take care of the wife eating also. So how much more so, if you have to take care of the wife, of course you have to take care of the kids. The Beis Din has to make an arrangement. The kids don't go land up begging. You're saying it may not be worth the whole thing. But let's say we're talking about a computer programmer, okay? Which usually he would make more than his food and his family's food, okay? He's making more than just bare food. You're saying he sold himself, he's going to work in this guy's company. Let's say, how do you know how much his value is? I'm saying he's doing something that's more valuable. We're assuming if Beis Din's selling him because he sold, he can't pay, there's obviously a value in his work.
If he's disabled or...
you're asking a good question. What happens if there's... So then the whole sale doesn't go through because the whole point of the sale is a monetary restitution, paying back the money that he sold that he couldn't pay. But if Beis Din's doing it, basically, what we're saying is Beis Din is doing it, they're the responsible people here. They have to take everything into account. The Torah says they have to take into account the wife. And we understand, according to Seichel in Pshat, in a very simple, basic Pshat, without having Psukim even, we understand if the wife needs to be taken care of, in this case, of course, the children also. However, our Pasuk here is talking about a different scenario. It's talking about somebody who's in a struggling situation. He sells himself. Now this is a voluntary sale. It's not connected with Beis Din. So Beis Din has no place or no obligation to mix in and make sure that the wife is taken care of, the kids are taken care of. No. They don't have any connection to this sale. Why should they have to overlook and see and insist that the master feed them? So I would have said in my seichel, I would have said intellectually, knowing the pasuk that when Beis Din sells, take care of the wife and kid, I would say in the case where a person sells himself, it's not the same. The Eved, the servant, has taken account when he's taking a price. He's selling himself. He's like, I can't afford. I'm very poor here. So when he sells himself, he has to take into account how much he has to pay his wife and kids for food. Otherwise, part of his sale price is going to have to take that. That's what I would think. So the Torah says, no. When he sells himself, he goes out with his children. From here, we know that the master is obligated also to feed the kids. In this case, this is a chiddush, that even if he sold himself, the master who buys him also buys the obligation to feed the children as well.
The pastor can say no?
Don't do the sale. If he does the sale, the Torah obligates him now. He has to feed the kids. Now he has a mitzvah to feed the kids.
He has 10 kids with no legs.
So don't buy him. Don't buy him.
But it's dead. But it's still.
So if you bought, it's not a punishment. If a person is struggling, somebody doesn't have money, and he can't get a job, and some guy is ready to buy him as a servant.
No,
speaking
about it.
Not Nimkar Beis Din. We finish with Beis Din. If it's not worth it, then Beis Din, nobody will buy him. Beis Din can't force the person, somebody to pay money. The whole thing is, if he's stolen, can't pay, and his value as a servant will, after a few years, be recouped, the theft, so then they have to sell him. We understand then they want to be responsible. The Beis Din is responsible. They take care of the wife and kids. The Torah says so. We understand it makes sense. But when he sells himself, maybe I would think he has obligations. Why are you putting it on the master? Comes the Torah and says, no, 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 no. He's obligated. If you buy somebody else as a servant, a fellow Jew, you are obligated to feed his kids. Just 1 second. Just paragraph 7. But now we'll understand why the pasuk says, who? He goes out and his children with him. Why? Because again, even the fact that once we've analyzed and said that this is not talking about a forced sale by Beis Din, this is talking about a voluntary sale, let's ask another question. Who said that the master has to pay for his food? The fact that when he buys a Jewish servant, he has to pay him food, is also a chiddush. The who is also a chiddush. The fact that he has to feed, not just the fact that he has to feed his kids, the fact that he has an obligation to feed the servant is also a chiddush. Why? We could think that if you sold yourself, the master doesn't have to take on the food responsibilities. He's paying him a price. He gave him a sum of money, right? Why does he have to now be responsible to pay for his food? Calculate it into your price. How much do you need? I want to buy you as a servant for 6 years. What's your price? Make a calculation, make an Excel. How much is my food? How much is the kids' food? Why do I have to, now I have to take care of your food as well? There wasn't, you know. Comes the tale and says, certainly we could say that he could just give him dry bread and minimal water, right? He's just have enough koyach to work, give him rations that he doesn't have, but not more. That's why the Torah says, no. Who? Uvana bimei. After when it comes to Yovel, then he goes out with his children. In other words, till now, you're obligated to pay him his food in a regular, and his children. Interesting that when I say, maybe I would think he doesn't have to give him food. There is an interesting, we know that when somebody buys a servant, actually, and he has only one cushion, who gets the cushion?
Servant.
Servants. But that's not al pi svara. We need a separate pasuk to teach us that. It says, v'yatza me'imach, he becomes like you. He has to eat the same food as you eat. He has to have the same conditions you have. But that's not, I mean, as svara, I would, without the Torah telling us that, I would think, no, maybe not. He sold himself. Look, usually you go and you're employed. You have to discuss with the employer first. Is he responsible for your food or are you responsible for your food? It's a negotiation. Here, the Torah says it's not a negotiation. If you buy a servant, the master who buys a servant has to know he has an obligation to feed him, his wife, and his kids. You wanted to ask?
No, I was going to say something about he does get, the master does get an advantage, because if it was your own farm, for example, your own vineyard, the kids and the wife would all be helping you.
They don't have to help.
No, they don't have to. But if the family is there, they would probably support their father.
Yeah, the Rebbe pointed out that
but
a wife is
later. It's not a reason.
Right. A wife is definitely a benefit if you can hire somebody. I mean, it could be a wife is a nag, and maybe it's a detraction. I don't know. But in the way it's meant to be, in the way it's meant to be, in the title, wife is a support to the husband. So it would be beneficial. Maybe you would think that he has the wife also thing. But that's not the reason. The title says.
Huh? This period, 6 years.
Yes, kids.
Do another one.
So. Okay, not a problem. So he has to feed him also. It's a form of tzedakah. In other words, when you buy a servant, I want to tell you just an interesting.
Because when they're released, aren't they also given?
I don't know if this is related, but there's an interesting. The Rambam says interestingly in Pirkei Avot when we say the yu aniim b'nei beitcha. Usually, the simple translation is you should have poor people to be comfortable in your home. In other words, bring them at your table, invite them. The Rambam says, hire poor people to be your attendants, to be your servant, to be your household help. You're giving them parnasa. Interesting thing. Yeah, but he says, aniim b'nei betcha, not bring them as philanthropy, as gemilut chasadim. Hire them. Interesting, somebody who's just passed away recently in the Persian community in New York, and he explained to me, when you come to his office, a very big jewelry office, you see many people working there that are would not be from his community, which wouldn't be able to get employment in other places. Yeah, they're older or the thing. And he says, part of my tzedakah is that I allow them to come to work and to be supported respectably. Yeah, it's a kopanim. So now we understand why here the pasuk says, "Hu banavimo," the who is also a piece of news. Now we'll understand also why, paragraph 8, when we asked why in the previous pasuk, the Torah says, the Rashi said he has to feed the wife and the children. Here, when he says he has to feed the children, he doesn't say and the wife. Why not? Because because in Pshutei Shel Mikra, here we're not talking about a wife. We're just talking about the kids. The wife is already mentioned before. Why here is the wife not part of this pasuk? We could say a few reasons for this. First of all, when a person sells himself, you can't learn from this pasuk that he's obligated also to feed the wife. We could say, because if the pasuk says here he has to feed the children, from this obligation to feed the children, we wouldn't know automatically without another pasuk that he also has to feed the wife. Why? Because we could say the fact that he has to feed the kids is because the Torah has pity on the children. They can't take care of themselves. But the wife, hey, this guy sold himself. He knew, she probably agreed, whatever. She knows that he's selling himself because he can't afford life. So she should go and work and support herself. The fact that the Torah here says that the kids got supported, that here is not the proof that he also has to support his wife. Also, we could say that according to what Rashi tells us, the way the Rashi teaches on the Torah, that the master is, even when the guy sells himself, the master has to pay for the wife's food. But we could say that that's because there's a benefit that the master has when the wife comes with her husband, the servant. And that's why, probably in the beginning, when he buys the servant, he intends, you're coming as a couple. That's in his intention, because it's beneficial for him to have a stable, reliable worker who has a wife together with him.
If you want.
However, this is not something that we learn from what the Torah tells us about the children. The children, they're merely an obligation without any benefit to the master. And that's why, if not for the Torah saying that the children need to be fed by the master, I would say, in from Svara, I would say maybe not. Look, you need money. You sold yourself. I take care of your kids now. Okay, your wife, I understand. She keeps you stable. With the kids, why do I need them running around? For what? I have to feed them. So the Torah says, no, you have to. Or we could say another thing. We could say that we could learn from the fact that when Beis Din sells him, even though the wife could technically support herself, nonetheless, the Beis Din forces the master to feed the wife as well. So we could say the same thing would apply if somebody sells himself, that the master has to give her food. And he can't say she should go work herself. Same way, when Beis Din says, sells her, you can't throw her to be self-employed. Same thing is when he sells himself, same. So in other words, what we're saying is like this, that there's two different scenarios here. And Rashi, therefore, has to comment on both, but there's a bit of a difference. The first scenario, the first pasuk in Mishpatim is talking about Beis Din sells him. And that's why he says, Banav, he says, V'yotza ishta ima, he says, from here the Torah is telling us that the master is obligated also to pay the wife. And if it's based in selling, so obviously based in can't just leave loose ends unwrapped, the wife and the kids. In our pasuk, it's just talking about the kids. He sold himself. Even the fact that he gets food is also a chiddush. Rashi will still say that the wife also needs to be fed by the master, but we can't learn it from the words here. We know it. Either we know it because why should there be any difference between him being sold by Beis Din or him selling himself. Also, we assume that the master would want the wife to come along. It's probably part of the deal. But at any rate, it helps us understand the differences in the way Rashi says, Im hu nimkar, if he was sold, who sold his children? Because the who is also, he sold himself. That's, but who sold his children? And why should they be part of the food plan? Say no. They too, the Torah obligates and says they too need to be fed. Paragraph 9. A Talmid Mamulach, a very seasoned student, a more in-depth student, could ask the following. In the end of the day, why is the master obligated to pay for the children? There's no benefit from the children. I mean, okay, the Torah forces it, but why? Why is the buyer of this servant, why is he responsible for the fact that this guy sold himself as a servant? And now he has to take care of the kids. Hello, I just bought a servant. I didn't buy a whole package deal to take care of kids. Why does the Torah place upon me this obligation? So Rashi answers by hinting that it's Rabbi Shimon who said this. Rabbi Shimon says, whenever Rashi brings the name of the one who says it, the Rebbe says, this always tells us, because Rashi wants us to take note that Rabbi Shimon said other things elsewhere, which will help us understand what he means here. What does Rabbi Shimon say elsewhere? Rabbi Shimon Bar Yochai says in the tractate of Baba Basra Anybody who called me she'ena maniach ben liyorsha, anybody who doesn't leave a son to inherit him, Hakadosh Baruch Hu maleh alav evra. Hashem must be full of anger on him. He didn't give him a son to inherit him. From this expression of Rashbi, we understand that we're not talking that he didn't fulfill the obligation of having children. He's talking that he doesn't have somebody to inherit him. In other words, if somebody leaves over a son to inherit him, that means that it causes the opposite of anger, it causes joy by Hashem. How do we know that? Because if Hashem says, if we're saying that if somebody does leave over a son to inherit him, it's anger, it means Hashem has anger. So the reverse, the flip side of that is that if the person does leave a son to inherit, it means Hashem has simcha. So according to Rashbi, according to Shimon Yochai, the emphasis over here of children is that there should be a continuation, a son that inherits him, the son that should be able to stand in the place of the father. Because the father and the son are one continuum, one continuation, and they're really part of one reality. This is why, this will help us understand why Rabbi Shimon here is insisting, and he's the one to say that the master has to pay for the food of the children. Because they are so connected to the father, the same way if he has to feed the father, the continuation of the father is the children, he has to feed the children. And now we'll also understand when it says that they go out, he goes out with his children and says he goes back to the inheritance of his fathers. Because he and his children are like one reality. And his fathers are one reality. So when he leaves, he should go back to that true reality that he is, to the inheritance of his fathers. Paragraph 10. From the wondrous things in allegory, in Remez, in this Rashi. When we talk about somebody being sold into exile, you know what that is allegoric to? What is that hinting at? Our exile. Jewish people sold into slavery by the exile. So the Pasuk says that the father and the children, in other words, our father in heaven, so to speak, and the Jews that are children to Hashem, are out there in the Golos, in the exile. Like Rabbi Shimon Yochai teaches, Chavivim Yisrael, Shelifnei HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the Bnei Yisrael are endeared, they're beloved to Hashem. Shebechol makom shegalu shechina imaim, wherever they're exiled, Hashem is with them. And about this, Rashi brings the teaching of Rabbi Shimon that says, it teaches us a great teaching. What does Rabbi Shimon say? Not just that wherever they are, shechina imaim, wherever they're exiled, the shechina is with them. But the question, im hu nimkar, if he was sold, banav mi mecharan bitmiya, who sold the children? Who's the he in this allegory? Hashem. What are we saying? We're saying, if he was sold, mele Hashem, okay, if Hashem, so to speak, wants to sell himself into exile, he's omnipotent, he can do anything. So he can put himself into exile and he can not get affected by it. But how do you sell the children? How can you sell the children, Hashem, your children, into Golos? Because if Golos has some kind of control over the Jews, then they'll lose their obvious status of being the children of Hashem. How can you do that? You can put yourself in Golos and nothing happens to you. But how could you put your children through that? So what does Rabbi Shimon Yochai answer? That the fact that the children are in Golos is only about their mizonot, their tzorchei aguf, the needs of their body. They're going through an exile. In other words, the needs that they have physically are in exile because they have to go through the Sara Medina, they have to go through the spiritual chief of the foreign country they're living in, the spiritual apparatus. There's a spiritual Sar, so to speak, in each country, and has to go through that, which is a bit of a negative reality, has to go through that negative piping. But the neshama of a Jew is never sold. He's never in Golos. As we remember, we know the saying that only our bodies Hashem gave into Golos, to exile, not our neshamas. And we've never been put under the servitude or under the control of any other nation in terms of our soul. The fact that there was a destruction, that's only the physical Beis HaMikdash that were destroyed, the sticks and the stones, the wood and the stones. About that, yes, the Goyim could have a control and they burnt it, they destroyed it. But on the true Beis HaMikdash, which is the spiritual Beis HaMikdash, and similarly, Beis HaMikdash in each and every one of us, that the Goy can't have any control over. There can't be any destruction on that. So you could think, for one second, but when it comes to the physical needs, so about that, there is control of a non-Jew over the Jew. So Rabbi Shimon says, no. This tells us that Rabbi, the master, is obligated to provide for the needs of the, for the food of the children. In other words, here in allegory, we're saying Hashem only wanted that the food should go through the apparatus, the piping of the forces of the country, the spiritual forces of the country they're in. But who does that tsar, who is that chief, that spiritual chief of the country, has no opinion. He's like a pawn. He's like an axe in the hand of the woodchopper, like a pawn in the hand of Hashem. And who's giving the real, who's giving the needs of the Jew? Hashem. And Mela, that's why even when they're in Galut, even when they're in exile, under the control of others, and it seems that they're fit, their neshamas, of course, are never under the control of any other force. But even for the physical needs, where it seems like it's under the control of some other force, that too is Rabo Chayav Bimzanot Banav. Master is obligated in the food of the children. So let's try and figure out what the Rebbe was saying here. In other words, we have the physical person selling himself, and we're saying that what? That the master has to pay the food for the person and for his children. The way Rashi says, he says, if he was sold, the guy who's selling himself, were his children sold? And we're saying that means, Hashem, maybe you can sell yourself and it doesn't affect you, but can you sell your children? They're going to get affected. So we say, no. What does it mean they're sold? They're sold only when about the food. In other words, they get the food from that same place, like the guy who sold himself. The children also get the food from the same place. Oh, so it's only about physicality that they're part of the sale. They're not really sold. But one second. But even if it's the physicality, you mean that guy is in charge of me? So you say, no. Rabo, the master, Hashem, is obligated to feed you. He's just making it go through that that spiritually uncomfortable, negative tsar, chief of the country. But don't worry, that chief doesn't have any control. It's coming from Hashem. So that's Rav Shimon Yochai telling us, even when we're in exile, Hashem is with us, Hashem is providing for us. And even in exile, we can have all of our needs met adequately. Because even when you're sold, the master is obligated to provide for the children. Hashem is obligated, so to speak. He obligates himself to provide for us all of our needs.